It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about the current Ebola outbreak. Since March, this outbreak has infected over 1,200 people, killed over 600 in West African countries, in the countries of Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Joining me now to help us understand this, the worst Ebola virus outbreak in history, Dr. Stanley Perlman, pediatrician and professor of microbiology at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Dr. Perlman, hello.
Hi, Ben.
Start out with, what is Ebola and what makes it so dangerous?
Well, that's a really good question. Ebola is caused by a virus that's found predominantly in Africa. Why it makes it so dangerous is this is really a complicated question because we don't understand how the virus works that well. What we do know is that when people get infected, they basically have, most people have a lot of trouble handling the infection, and that's why you get death rates of 60 to 90%.
Mm-hmm. How is it transmitted?
This is, it's a disease that's transmitted via liquid, so it's not a respiratory spread. It's by direct contact through broken skin or mucous membranes.
Mm-hmm. And to prevent, prevention then depends on what?
Prevention, there's several levels of prevention. These epidemics often start when people are exposed to non-human primates that are in the jungle and have been infected, or they're exposed to bats that have been infected. So the important point there is that the people in the, those countries should not eat or not touch the dead animals that may have died from Ebola. That's may be difficult because they may use some of those, that meat for their food. Then once people have it, then it's important for people to be hospitalized and isolated, and the spread is through direct contact, as we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned other species having Ebola. So that gets at a question I wanted to have you tackle, which is, where do we think Ebola came from? Was it present in animal species and then jumped to our species?
Well, I think I don't know that it really jumped to our species. It's probably, we think, a fruit bat virus. And in fruit bats, the bats don't get sick from the virus. This is true for a lot of bat diseases, but Ebola is one of them. So bats don't get infected, but they may have droppings that either on chimpanzees, gorillas, monkeys, etc., porcupines may come in contact with or eat, and then they become sick, and humans become sick the same way. They're really not part of the normal process, but if they're exposed, the virus is very virulent in these populations.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned mortality rates 60 to 90%. What is happening in the body? How much do we understand about what Ebola does in the body?
Well, what we think happens is that the virus causes a huge release of proteins that end up causing kidney damage and breakdown of the blood vessels, so that you end up having a hemorrhagic fever. And in fact, when people come into the hospital with these symptoms, you have to make sure they don't have things like malaria, typhoid fever, or other hemorrhagic fevers before you narrow it down to Ebola.
Mm-hmm. What determines whether an infected individual lives or dies with Ebola?
Well, it's really a question of whether they can handle the infection. We don't understand the immunity very well. It probably is the usual combination of a good response immediately and then the memory response that the immune system has that helps eliminate the virus.
But what is that memory response?
That's done by cells and by antibodies. But a lot of people with Ebola die so quickly that there's not enough time for those parts of the immune response to cut in.
Mm-hmm. We just spoke with an Iowan living in Liberia. We mentioned earlier in the program that the Peace Corps, I don't know if you heard this, the Peace Corps ordered the evacuation of hundreds of its volunteers,
yep,
not only from Liberia but other West African countries,
right.
Guinea, Sierra Leone. What advice would you have for expatriates living in these affected countries?
Well, I think the most important thing is to be very cautious. I think I'd probably leave if I had that option or if I was worried enough. The big thing is to not be around someone who's sick and not in the hospital who might have this disease, which is easier said than done. The head of the healthcare system in Sierra Leone just died, and he, according to the news reports, got infected from his sister, who he didn't even know was sick. So if somebody who's that expert can recognize someone who's that sick, it just becomes really hard. But what we know about this infection is that the sicker you get, the more virus you have. So it's to little different than some other infections where virus goes down as people get sick. But here, it seems that the amounts of virus in the blood and in other body fluids are very, very high.
Mm-hmm. This latest outbreak, Ebola has been around for a while, but this is the worst outbreak in history of Ebola, the Ebola virus. I understand it's called the Zaire strain and very deadly. What do we know about what caused this latest flare-up, this outbreak, the worst one in history?
I don't know how much we actually know other than that it seems that more people were exposed, and it's possible that the precautions, because more people were exposed and precautions weren't necessarily better, at least now. I think initially they may have been a little better, but then for various reasons, people were more exposed to dead bodies and sick people. And I think that's how it spread, but I don't think there's a really good answer as to why this is worse than the outbreak from a few years ago. It's all a question of exposure.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you look back in history about other viruses, but I'm wondering, with morbidity at 90% in some cases, do we have any other viruses in history that match this horrendous level of morbidity?
Yeah, I cannot think of one. There may be something out there. There may be other hemorrhagic fevers that are in South America and in Asia. I don't know the numbers on that. Something like smallpox, at its worst, had like a 25% mortality. The influenza outbreak in 1918, which is a dreadful disease, had only a few percent mortality. So this is incredibly high. The good news about it is that since it's not spread by respiratory spread, it's actually much easier to control because respiratory tends to be much harder when it's in the air.
Mm-hmm. Has this spread outside of West Africa, do you know?
Not that I've heard of so far. Nigeria, there's one case. It's certainly spread by somebody going through an airport, which is another scary thing. I think that some of the carriers are now not going through Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea because they're worried.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if all carriers are doing that. But there certainly is concern about spread. Again, if somebody were to come to the U.S. with this, if we knew their history of travel, we would and they became ill at all, we would isolate them immediately. That's what one would hope, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Is it conceivable that this could find its way to North America?
I think that it is conceivable. If somebody is not quite sick and gets on an airplane, isn't screened properly, leaving the areas with this high risk or high number of cases, then that person could arrive in the U.S. and he or she could expose some people on the airplane as well as people when he arrives. You just have to hope that people are conscientious and about not going on airplanes when they're sick at a time like this.
Mm-hmm. What practices, that's to be a global effort, but practices and safeguards are in place to prevent the spreading of this or other types of deadly diseases?
Well, I think it's mostly coordination between countries and airlines and people being responsible when they're sick. There's really not other ways. It's not like people can leave the country and who look fine and have to have an antibody test or some other test to show they're not infected. There's no way to do that right now.
So after someone is infected, how soon does that make its presence felt?
Well, the numbers that I read are somewhere between 2 to 21 days. I think that non-human primates have been told it's 5 or 6 days. I think humans are usually a little longer, even though 2 days is considered the shortest time. So it is quite a while. But remember that because the virus load goes up all the time during the infection, you're going to probably be less infectious early on, and you'll be more infectious later on as you develop more symptoms.
What other viruses, Dr. Perlman, are we most worried about in the world today?
Oh, this probably isn't exactly what you mean, but of course the biggest killer is still HIV. There's diseases like influenza. In terms of diseases like Ebola, which are coming from animal populations and don't seem to infect large numbers of people but cause bad disease, we of course have Ebola. There's another virus related to it called Marburg. There's Nipah virus in India, and then the one that's been in the news until Ebola took over was the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus, which also has a high mortality, only about 30%, which of course I say only because compared to Ebola, it's 60 to 90%. It it's much less. And, of course, that outbreak had some of the same issues because the reason it was not as well controlled as it might be is some questions about practices in countries and politics and the stigma of having being infected and the country having these infections. So there's some parallels between the two outbreaks.
Dr. Perlman, and finally, it may seem like a wacky question, and perhaps it is a plague that wipes out a significant portion of the population on a continent or in the world a thing of the past? Could it conceivably happen in the 21st century?
It's very hard to answer that question. Most of the time, once we start knowing that there's a problem, we have ways to deal with it, to isolate patients, to isolate regions. So it would seem less likely than occurred in 1300s with the plague, where something like a third of the population got wiped out. So I don't think that kind of thing would happen, but it's something we all worry about, but I don't think it's likely to happen. The other thing that probably should be said is that there's no therapy for this disease right now. There's several investigations in the laboratory that suggest there's possibilities of therapy, but because there's really so few cases, no pharmaceutical company would be interested in spending resources to get something to market. In the short term, though, I've heard that some of these prospective vaccines or therapies are starting to be investigated in human populations because they have some chance of working and the mortality is so high that some of the precautions we do on getting medicines to the clinic may be loosened up a little bit.
So you said there's no cure to this.
Right.
Are there any medicines, anything that other countries can send into these affected areas to help?
The answer is that people have the following kinds of therapies. They have antibodies against the virus. That in a lot of infections, when you give antibodies to viral infection, it doesn't make much of a difference. But here, where it doesn't seem like virus is being controlled at all, antibodies may help. So there's stockpiles of high titer antibodies, I think, that could be useful. There's also vaccines that may, if you're given early enough during the infection, may so quickly develop an antibody response that they can, the person's natural antibody response would be able to handle the infection. And the idea is to reduce the amount of virus so that the host can then control it.
Dr. Stanley Perlman, pediatrician and professor of microbiology at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Very interesting conversation. Thank you, Dr. Perlman.
You're very welcome.